Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Take Cast. My name is Davis Matic. You can find me on Twitter at Davis Matic. In this episode of the show, I am joined by Thor Nystrom from RotoWorld.com to talk about the 2019 NFL Draft. We go through all of the major skill positions on offense and defense. On offense, we gave our guys, the guys that we believe are better than the consensus believes and our reasoning behind that. Then we cycled through some of the big sleeper defensive prospects. Really, if you're looking to get a comprehensive understanding of the players you want your team to draft in the 2019 draft, this is the podcast for you. Of course, if you like the show, you can always leave a rating and review on iTunes. That is incredibly helpful. You can also support the show and get extra episodes by subscribing to it on Patreon, patreon.com/takecast. And we are presented by dailyroto.com, the best projections and tools in the daily fantasy industry. You can get 10% off of the elite package using the promo code Rory today. You can also get 10% off of the Roto Experts NFL 365 package using the promo code Matic. And that is, of course, the project that I am heading up. All of my exclusive NFL content is available there. And now let's get into the episode. All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome to our final NFL Draft Preview show here on The Take Cast. My name is Davis Matic. I'm bringing in Thor Nystrom from Roto World. We actually just did a show with Pat Mayo over the weekend, and you guys probably listened to that. But I wanted to bring Thor on to talk about our guys, because I think that this is always an instructive example of, you know, how people are thinking about the draft, and also should give you guys some fun stuff to pair it to your friends watching the draft. Thor, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Davis. How you doing?
You know, fantastic. What are you actually, this before we even get into it, what are you most excited about over the 3 days of the draft? Either what team or what pick are you most excited about, you know, actually finally finding out the outcome to?
Well, this is kind of like personal, but I desperately want my Minnesota Vikings to take an offensive lineman at 18. And so I think if there was one thing, if you're like, what one pick which do you want to know right now? It would be, are the Vikings going to actually do this thing right this year?
I mean, if they don't take, you know, Cody Ford, Jonah Williams, Juwan Taylor, I would be flummoxed. I've had them taking an offensive tackle in all three mock drafts that I did because it just feels so obvious.
I want Dillard so bad. When I did that thing at the NBC building last week with Sims and Norris, that's, you know, I had the Vikings pick. I was assigned the Vikings pick. We did a rotating pick thing. I was every three. I had the Vikings pick, and I was fortunate enough to get Dillard because Sims, a couple of picks before them for the Panthers, took Ford. I was so excited.
All right. So the reason I wanted to have you on is I wanted to talk about our guys, some guys that we have different, higher, lower than consensus on. And I want to start with quarterbacks because I have a pretty specific answer to this one. But I'm going to let you go first with quarterbacks. Who is your guy at the quarterback position?
You have a guy that we like. Well, I'll give you a couple. You know, if we're going to go with the top, the consensus top five, you know, with Haskins, Murray, Jones, Greer, Locke, I guess the guy that I would be higher on the consensus among those guys would be Jones, who I rank as the third quarterback. And then if you're going to go a little bit deeper, Easton Stick is my boy. I actually rank Easton Stick as the number six quarterback in the class. You know, with him, you sort of get two things. You get the athleticism of Taysom Hill, and you get the, you know, the opportunity to do different Taysom Hill things with the Easton Stick and sub packages and stuff like that. But Easton Stick is also like a legitimate quarterback. You know, I compare him like just as a thrower to like a poor man's or maybe even a homeless man's Mitch Trubisky, but he can play the quarterback position. I mean, he's also a fabulous athlete. And then with Daniel Jones, you know, we talked a little bit, I think we brushed on this on Pat's show. I just think that, you know, people that have watched the tape or the analytics guys with the numbers, they're not baking in enough context about Daniel Jones's situation. And so for those reasons, I'm a little bit higher on him than the consensus.
So I actually think Daniel Jones is going to go to the Giants at number six. I am now convinced that Daniel Jones is going to go there. I don't think it's a very good selection. I definitely am doing things a lot by the numbers, especially when looking at quarterbacks. Though I do think you have to bring in some more artistry when you're looking at quarterbacks. You need to think more about how they look on film, the offensive scheme that they played in college, and how they might fit in schemes that are you know, successful in the NFL now. And that's why my guy is Will Grier. I basically think that Will Grier can sort of be Ryan Fitzpatrick in the NFL. I think that his arm is good enough. And I think that he played in an offensive scheme at West Virginia that's very set up to what NFL teams are wanting their quarterbacks to do now, which is, you know, getting the ball out quickly, hitting guys in stride. You know, teams are running a lot of mesh and crossing routes now, which is a ton of what he was doing at West Virginia with Gary Jennings. And I mean, I think he showed decent enough touch on deep stuff to David Sills. Like I'm pretty encouraged by Will Grier. Like if some team took him in the second round, I don't really think I would be surprised or think that was like a bad selection.
Yeah. And I love that one too, man. Yeah. I guess he would qualify for me as well, just under, you know, the construct of what we're doing. Cause I rate him 4. I rate him above Drew Lock. I'm just slotting I'll be done with this in a couple hours after we get off, but I've been slotting my top 400 board here. Will Grier, I have him as a second round prospect. I'm trying to find him, but I have him somewhere in that second round file. I mean, I would absolutely advocate for a team that needed a quarterback to take him there. You compare him to Fitzpatrick. I compare him to a slightly better Case Keenum. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the floor is so high with Will Grier. I just can't see him being anything less than a really good backup. And I think there's a really strong chance that he's going to be a below average starter. It's not terribly sexy. But what people need to understand is there's 32 teams. You know, not everyone gets to have, you know, Peyton Manning or Aaron Rodgers or whatever. Like, you know, the other teams, you have to do the best you can, you know, and you have to get the best quarterback you can. So I'd rather be starting the 25th best quarterback in the league than the 45th, which we saw a couple teams do last year.
And you get him on a rookie contract, you get to hold him for 4, I guess if you take him in the second round, you only keep him for 4 years, but you're paying your backup quarterback way less money than you would be if you're paying a vet quarterback that money. And I think Grier is like a kind of guy who can make the quarterback room better too. It seems like all the profiles and articles about him seem to indicate that he's like a good dude, like a guy you would want to have in your quarterback room, which I think definitely counts for something when evaluating some of these guys.
100%, yeah. And, you know, Grier's married. He's been through a lot. You know, he got popped for that PED suspension earlier in his career at Florida, and then he transferred. And I think he sort of rededicated his life to his family, you know, and his craft, you know, after that. And, yeah, just came out and just absolutely dominated at West Virginia for Holgorsen, the coach who was the offensive coordinator for Keenum back in the day at Houston.
Yeah. All right. So moving on to running backs now, I think this is going to be a more interesting conversation than at quarterback, because everyone's opinions on this running back class is different. Some people have Josh Jacobs as the clear one. Some people don't care that Benny Snell and Devin Singletary were, you know, put on some of the worst performances at the combine that we've ever seen, you know, highly touted running back prospects have. This is a class, and they're like Rodney Anderson could go anywhere from your second rated running back to your 15th rank based on how you feel about his health. So who is your guy at the running back position?
Yeah. And it's funny you say that about Rodney Anderson. He is my 15th running back.
Yeah. He's 13th for me.
Okay. Yeah. I think we probably see him very similarly. The guys that I like more than the consensus, I can toss several names at you. Bryce Love would be number one. I rank him 7th. You know, and the way that I see this is I would, you know, if I was running an NFL team, I would very rarely take a running back in the top 50 picks. So the way that I would do it is just take flyers on high upside guys in day 3. That would be my ideology. If they don't work out, fine, cut them. You know, like, because we can get guys, you know, CJ Andersons and stuff like that. We can pick guys up that can do different things. Bryce Love in 2017 was one of the 30 or 40 best running backs on planet Earth, you know, and if we can get him back there, it's not assured, you know, he tore his ACL in December, but if he can get back there, he can do stuff that's going to help us win. He'd be one. Ryquell Armstead, I have him running back 11. I'm not sure where other people have him, but
most people have him outside their top 15. I don't have him in my top 15, but maybe I just didn't, you know, he just didn't come up for me like doing some of the numbers based research, probably because he played at Temple.
Yeah, and he was injured a lot. He was banged up a lot those past couple years. And the other thing that where, you know, there's a red flag in his evaluation, so I understand why he gets pushed down a little bit, is he's not a receiver. He just doesn't do it. But, you know, in terms of like a between the tackle guy, I really like him. He had the highest speed score in this class by far, and he is an absolute brawler on the field. You know, he's one of those guys who goes down on his sword. He's one of the guys running down the field. You think he's going to get in a fist fight? Just extremely physical. He's gotten comp to Jordan Howard, obviously, you know, because of the, you know, we're pretty good between the tackles. We don't really catch the ball. So I think that's kind of fair. Divine Azigbo is another guy I like, big kid with swift feet. And, you know, going back to CJ Anderson, that's the comp I gave for Azigbo. So those are a couple guys. And then, you know, this is a running back class. Like, it is very deep. Like, there are running backs that will go undrafted.
Who are still good, yeah.
Who are still good. You know, like Phillip Lindsay last year. Like, Phillip Lindsay did so much at Colorado, you know, and he was a burner. And, you know, last year's class, it had some similarities, and he got pushed out of there. But there are also guys, you know, Ty Johnson, for instance, a kid from Maryland, is a guy who is sort of like that, you know, an undersized burner kind of a guy. Like, there are guys, if you need a running back, you need running back depth, and you're not able to get one during the draft, there's going to be – got Bruce Anderson from North Dakota State's another one. James Williams from Wazoo, a kid that we know can catch really well. Darwin Thompson, a kid from Utah State. He was on Bruce Feldman's freak list. Just a great athlete, can catch the ball, this kind of stuff. So there's something for every flavor here.
So my guy, amongst guys who are going to get drafted and, you know, have roles on teams right away, is Justice Hill from Oklahoma State. I have him way higher than consensus. I have him inside my top five, basically because I think, one, he had some pretty impressive production at Oklahoma State where he, you know, he forced future NFL starting running back Chris Carson to the bench when he was a true freshman. He caught 31 passes his sophomore season, but he fell back in that his last year. But those Oklahoma State teams, in terms of like touchdown production, are just weird because they let their quarterbacks run for 10 touchdowns every single year. And he's also super fast. So for me, Justice Hill, like, if draft capital didn't matter to how I was ranking these guys, like, I think Justice Hill is a better running back than Josh Jacobs. I'm like more impressed watching Justin Hill than Josh Jacobs. And I guess sort of my sleeper guy, where do you think Alex Barnes gets drafted? Does he count as a sleeper?
I think so. Yeah. I would say round five, maybe round six.
Yeah. Like, right? he's a guy I can see having a legit 6-7 year NFL career, 150 carries a year, 40 catches a year. Like, I think he's that sort of guy. And then
you talk about another stud with speed score. I mean, yeah. Barnes is a big banger. You know, there's not a ton of nuance to his game, but he's a really big kid. He competes real hard, and he tested great. So yeah, I could definitely see that one.
Yeah, he wasn't even really on people's draft boards until the combine, and he was like the absolute spark stud. And then the other spark guy is Travis Homer. He wasn't even really used as a running back very much, but he did catch 37 passes his last two seasons at Miami. Just Miami football, it's just been a weird situation for the last few years. But if I was
like that one.
Yeah, if we're talking about like undrafted seventh round guys, Travis Homer is like a guy who I think probably has, you know, a multi-year NFL career in him, sort of based on athleticism and catching passes.
Agreed.
Yeah. All right. So moving on to, this should be the longest discussion, probably wide receivers, because there are so many different ways that that we can go here. Well, first thing I want to ask you is where do you stand on DK Metcalf?
I rank him fifth, wide receiver five. Yeah, you know, I'm just a bit lower on him. The lack of lateral agility that we saw in Indianapolis, it wasn't a surprise to anyone that watched him in college. You know, he's very labored, and to the point where he has to telegraph. You know, if he's going to make a cut in, try to make a play in the intermediate sector, he's going to telegraph it. It's part of the reason why Greedy shut him down and some other high-end, like, SEC cornerback shut him down. You know, if you have a cornerback across from him that can negate the long game, he really starts to struggle. And so I have questions there. I also have questions about his durability. He's a guy, two of his 3 years at Ole Miss ended in season-ending injuries. And you look at the way his body looks, and you look at, like, his body fat count, which any doctor would tell you is unhealthy for a human being. I just think there's reasons to be concern there. The issue is you can't really drop them lower than five. You know, I would love to, but you know, the guys below there that I have, it's, you know, it's like Debo and Andy Isabella. And then one guy, well, a couple of guys I'm going to talk about here in a second, and Jalen Hurd and Miles Boykin. But yeah, I just think he's probably got to be in the top five, but there are real reasons to be concerned there.
So I have him five as well, and I would hear an argument for him being anywhere from 1 to 10. Basically, if you wanted to argue, all you care about is upside, and you think that Metcalf has the physical upside to play on the outside. I guess that's another thing, is people are projecting Harry, AJ Brown, Marquise Brown, Butler. They're projecting a lot of these guys to be big slots, and I don't think anyone is projecting that for Metcalf. They're saying, no, he's an X wide receiver. He's going to play on the left side of your formation, and he's going to be, you know, probably one of the best guys in the NFL at running go routes and running drag routes. I would hear that. I think that the downside for him, though, is like Philip Dorsett level first round bust, where you get, you know, you get 2 years and 60 catches from him and you cut him and he ends up being on another team by his third season. I think that's like a very real outcome for him.
Yeah. And the point I'd add there to what Davis is saying is that's not an added value with DK. The reason that is because DK categorically could not handle the slot. You know, this is not a shifty guy, you know, very labored in his movements. And so he's stuck outside. You know, whereas Butler could do either thing. I think Hollywood can do either thing. Who are some of the other guys you were saying there? It's a lot of guys.
My top five is in order: N'Keal Harry, AJ Brown, Arcega Whiteside, Hollywood Brown, DK Metcalf, and then Butler at six. But like that would be my tier one. I'd cut off tier one after those guys, and I would hear an argument for them to go in any order.
Yeah, and yeah, so I just think, you know, Butler's a guy that could do either. Harry's a guy that could do either. Brown's a guy that could do either. But those are guys that I'm going to have on the outside, but they could do either. Brown's a guy who's going to be that big slot, but I think also eventually, if you wanted to, he could play outside. You know, I don't know if you're going to want him to or not. He's great in the slot. But Metcalf is a guy, you know, famously was plastered to the left side of Ole Miss's spread formation, and he has to play outside in the pros. I mean, that's what he is. He's a one-trick pony, north-south speed guy. And yeah, the measurables are crazy. The size-speed combination is crazy, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, hopefully he's going to be a very good pop-the-top guy in the NFL. We'll see. I think there's a lot of things in his profile that – you know, concern that, you know, the reasons that he has a higher risk profile than some of these other guys. But if he booms and he stays healthy, he is going to be a very scary downfield guy.
Yeah. All right. So who is your first guy who you are much higher on than consensus at wide receiver?
Well, so maybe I shouldn't say Boykin, because I feel like at this point, Boykin for a lot of people has moved up to maybe into the top 10 or around there.
He like started out being a legit sleeper, and he's like chalk top 10 now. Like, I don't know if anyone has him outside their top 10. I'm sure some people do.
Yeah, so I guess I can't say him. So I'll say Jalen Hurd, who's a guy I've been really high on during this process. 6'5", 226, tested in the 76th percentile. You know, he was a kid who was a five-star running back at Tennessee. He started over Alvin Kamara. I think a lot of people know that. And he decided he wanted to change positions and change schools, get away from Butch Jones. And, you know, Butch Jones, before, they were using him as this like old school hammerback type guy. And Hurd ends up getting a concussion. There was a lot of disagreement about his role and stuff. And, you know, Hurd figured, well, you know, if I switch to receiver, then, you know, my career is going to get longer. You know, my financial opportunity will be better and I'll cut the injury risk. Tennessee didn't want him to do it. So he bounced out, went to Baylor. And they really built him up. And, you know, this year was his first year playing receiver full time. And, you know, last year's it was his, you know, his transfer year or whatever this year. So when he started, they had him in the slot, you know, and early in the season, it was a lot of just very simple concepts, you know, more or less like go 6-7 yards downfield and turn around. We're going to hit you on the numbers and you run. And so he did that great, you know, and they also a really interesting thing they did. I didn't think I was going to see this year, but they convinced Hurd to sort of harken back to his Tennessee days when Baylor was in short yardage situations. And so they go into the I formation, they needed 3-4 yards and Hurd would get it every single time. I mean, he's a very good running back. He's a kid who, when he was coming in as a five-star, wasn't as a running back. It was as an athlete. You know, ESPN didn't know if he was going to play running back, tight end, linebacker, you know, safety, H-back, you know, like where they were going to put him or whatever. He's very, very skilled. So I think right out of the box, you get an athletic, nuanced, polished, big slot. I think you get a short yardage back, which I think has to be discussed. You know, like You know, again, I'm coming to you guys from Minneapolis. The Vikings are a team that needs running back depth. And so, you know, whenever it's talked about, it's like, oh, you know, maybe they'll use a seventh round pick and get, you know, a guy behind Delvin and stuff, you know, because Latavius left and Rock Thomas had his pot suspension or whatever. Mm-hmm. But like, if you drafted Hurd, you know, because they need a receiver too. If you drafted Hurd, well, you can essentially use him as your third running back just by using him situationally in short yardage situation. So I think you get that. And I also think you give yourself the opportunity to potentially develop him into an outside receiver. We'll see. But even if he never gets there, I already got two things with him that I know are going to help my team win.
I am unsure how to feel about Jalen Hurd. There are a couple of things going in his favor. The first is that he is definitely athletic, and he does bring some positional flexibility. You can use him in a couple different ways. The things that are going against him obviously would be, you know, only one season of wide receiver experience, and he is coming in at, you know, an older age. I do think when you're looking at guys that you're taking in the sixth, seventh round or as, you know, priority free agents, I totally see why a team would talk themselves into Hurd. Like, I do totally get this is a guy you can mold. This is a guy who you can probably build something with if he gets coached up, and it seems like he is probably pretty coachable. I'm kind of unsure why he is not getting more pub. Like, why would a guy who excelled at two positions in the SEC and in the Big 12 not be getting more pub from, you know, big draft?
Yeah, I think a part of it is because his reputation, Hurd's reputation, took a huge shot when he left Tennessee. And so you get a lot of these crusty old school football guys who are like, oh, he quit on the team. A guy who quit on the team will never be on my team. He'll never be on my board. It's like, shut up. You know, like, you guys are not considering context with this thing. He didn't want to be a running back anymore. Butch is running the guy 25 times a game. They had Kamara behind him. They did not have to put him in harm's way like that. They kept doing it anyway. He gets a concussion. Like, you know, this is a kid that could have played any position, and he could have gone to any school that he wanted to. And he decided to stay home. And, you know, in his opinion, I think he's got a point, is that, you know, they didn't do right by him with the situation as it went along. You know, early on, I think they were on the same page, but it wasn't later on. And I think because of that, there's a lot of people that just wrote him off. And then there's the other thing of, like, you know, like you were saying, you know, so some of the analytics guys don't like him because you're talking about a kid who had like a late breakout age at wide receiver. But, you know, my counterpoint would be, this is a kid who is so athletic. He's, and, you know, Davis, I mean, think back. Who is the last guy that you can think of that starred in two different Power 5 conferences, you know, two different teams at two different positions during his career? I mean, it's almost unheard of, to use the pun. And he could have done more. You know, I think he could have played other positions too. You know, so just a fabulously athletic player. I think you have to consider context with him. And I think the people that miss him are not doing that.
Yeah, I can get on board with all of that. So I have two sleepers here. We have Stanley Morgan Jr., who, yep, in the entire history of Nebraska football, he is their only 1,000-yard wide receiver, which is just, it's pretty unreal to me. He tested pretty well athletically. He played well in what was a super run-heavy Big Ten offense. I think that he definitely has an NFL future. And then my other guy is my boy, Ashton Doolin from Malone University. It really does not get more sleepery than a guy. I mean, he's for sure going to be a seventh-round pick or an undrafted free agent. But scouts were actually coming to Malone University practices over the course of his final season there, and some guys came more than twice, according to a couple newspaper articles that featured Doolin. He had a 65% of Malone University's passing production his final season, showed up at the combine, you know, was the first player ever invited to the combine from Malone University, crushed it there. I think Doolin, he could be, you know, the next Jeff Janis, right? The next small school guy who gets a cult following for whatever team drafts him.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You're talking 6'1", 215, tested in the 83rd percentile, I believe. You know, and he was drawn, you know, Janis is one, Miles Austin is another one. He's drawn comps to some of those, you know, some of those guys that panned out, you know, small school guys. They don't all pan out, but some of them do. And I agree, the physical package there is very impressive. You know, I have him down at 38. You know, you wonder about the jump up in competition. You wonder about like the route running and stuff like that. But when you are going to like throw a dart, you know, some of these guys down here just aren't terribly athletic. You know, you know, like the Tyree Brady's or the little Jordan Humphreys or the DeMarcus Lodges or the Nyquan Murray's or the Jovante Durant's. Like, those are all guys that are sort of in that phylum that all tested beneath the 15th percentile in spark. So, I mean, Doolin's a kid, you know that he's an NFL athlete. You know that. I mean, he just is, right? Yeah. And so we just have to teach him how to play at an NFL level and get NFL skills. If he does, yeah, it's going to be a bonanza.
Yeah. So now we got to move on to probably the most projectable or least projectable position in all of scouting. No one, I'm pretty convinced no one knows which tight ends are going to become good. People knew that that Gronk was going to be good. But, you know, there are guys who are – I was actually looking at this the other day. Brandon Pettigrew got drafted in the first round, I believe 20th overall, and he scored 9 touchdowns in college, including 0, his final season at Oklahoma State. And just the list of tight ends who've been drafted in the first and second round over the last 10 years, it's like a legitimately hilarious list. Like, some of the biggest draft busts at all time have come at the tight end position. So first, I want you to give your TJ Hawkinson tight end one. You can give your TJ Hawkinson tight end one monologue here.
Yeah, so and I agree with everything you were saying, Dave. I mean, hell, even Gronkowski, the one counterexample you gave, I don't know if people thought, you know.
Yeah, he had a hurt back, right? So people weren't even 100% sure.
Yeah, he fell into the second round and pretty deep into the second round, if memory serves. So, yeah, but, you know, he did have skill, you know, but, you know, like you said, it's hard to project these tight ends coming into the league. I think Hawkinson is different. I think he's different than the prospects we've seen the last decade. I think he's absolutely a top 10 prospect. I think he's the best prospect to come into the league since Vernon Davis at that position. And the reason is, best blocking tight end in college that I've ever seen. There's not anyone that I can even put close. You know, when I try to think of, well, who's number two, it's hard for me to, you know, to go there. He was also the best receiving tight end in college football last year. He was on the same team as the guy that everyone else thinks is the most gifted receiver, you know, in terms of tight end in this class, Noah Fant. Hawkinson was the number one guy from the jump at Iowa last season. He wasn't before, you know, in 2017, he was more of a blocking specialist, but last year just took a huge leap forward, usurped Noah Fant on the pecking order at Iowa. You know, and he can just do so many different things. That's the other thing I'd say. I mean, you get a crazy game, you know, game changer type blocker, you know, a guy on every single play is going to do stuff with blocking. And you also get this stud receiver, this great athlete and huge kid, but you can also just move him all over the place. I consider him an offensive chess piece. You can play him in line. He's going to wipe defensive ends out. He did it all the time in college. You can move him around like an H-back, you know, motion him into the backfield, do different blocking things you have to do there, seal blocks and stuff like that. You can use him as a lead blocker. Iowa did this a lot, you know, when they were in short yardage situations. All right, TJ, go in there as a fullback and just, you know, blow somebody up. He'd do that. You can play him in the slot. You can play him on the outside if you wanted. He's a kid that on every single play, he's going to add something, whether it's as a blocker, whether it's as a receiver. You can feature him in both. He can be your sort of trump card as a blocker. And then, you know, as a receiver, he's extremely reliable, very good hands, and he's getting better and better and better at that. You know, like I said, 2017, it was Fant. It was the Fant show. You know, I mean, Hawkinson was like a tertiary option at best in their passing offense, and he just took a huge leap forward this year. I think that is only starting. The only athletic thing that he perhaps doesn't have is foot speed. You know, I think he tested 4.70. He runs a little bit faster than that on the field, but every other part of his athletic profile is out of this world. You know, and you know, one way that you saw this manifest last year would be, you know, he'd catch the ball, he'd shuck someone off him, and then he'd start heading downfield. And when safeties would start bearing down on him, they try to do the Gronk thing, take out his knees. Hawkinson would just leap over him, you know, and so he's a very difficult guy to get down, and he's very reliable getting the ball. Love Hawkinson.
Yeah, I definitely think that Hawkinson is the best tight end prospect. I do think that Fant probably will be, at least for the next couple of years, he'll be better for fantasy, because I'm pretty sure he's not even going to be asked to be in line at all. Like, whatever team drafts Fant, I'm pretty sure they're going to be like, we don't want you to block. I think he's just going to be a big slot wide receiver.
Yeah, and I could see that. You know, he tries is what I'll say for Fant. Like, as a blocker, like, you know, he has been an inline. He does try. He does give effort. He's very athletic. He'll get his hands on you. He'll try to get in the right position, but he gets tossed aside by anyone that has any sort of power. And you see this with Fant also as a receiver. You know, he's a guy who just does not have great contact balance. He's not good in traffic. Doesn't make a ton of contested catches. He also does not break many tackles when he has the ball in his hand. So, you know, people need to know that Fant is a space player. You know, you get him out in space, he's going to out athlete the guy across from him. And if there's not someone right there that's making it a hard contested situation for him, he's coming down with the ball. You know, and so he's a red zone killer and stuff like that. But he's a guy, you know, you talk about it, Davis. Like, he's more of like a joker. You know, the example that I use is like, you have the Iowa last year had sort of the Rob Gronkowski, Aaron Hernandez kind of thing. And Brian Ferentz, who was the offensive coordinator, was the tight end coach, you know, early in the career of both those guys with the Patriots for one season, was a tight end coach. And he used them similarly. And I think with Fant, yeah, he's a guy that you have to motion around. You have to get him in space. You know, it's like in basketball when you have like a 3-point specialist, like a JJ Redick. Like, he's really good. Don't get me wrong, but JJ is not going to create his own shot. The factors have to be correct for him. And it's the same thing with Fant. Like, you have to find a way to get that kid in space, and then he's dangerous. Whereas Hockenson is just a dangerous man, you know, like between those hashes, he is a very dangerous man, no matter what's going on. So yeah. So Fant, I would agree with you, you know, maybe down the line, if he bulks up a little bit, you could get there. And he could sort of transcend that Evan Engram thing, maybe, but for sure. I mean, early on in his career, absolutely. Point well taken, Davis. Totally agree with you.
Yeah. All right, now we got to move to something you know way more about than me. We are going to – oh, actually, wait, no. I do need to give my tight end, and it is Jay Sternberger, who actually attended your Kansas University, had like 4 catches and was like
– one.
Yeah.
In two years. He was in Lawrence for 2 years. They gave him one ball.
Yeah. So he was like, you know what? I actually want to play. So he went and played at a community college in Oklahoma, had 7 touchdowns, 50 catches there at community college, and then transferred to Texas A&M and was actually their leading receiver, which, like, you really do not see tight ends end up as teams' leading pass catchers very often in college. It's just pretty rare. I can't really remember someone who's done it since, like, Jason Morrow at Texas Tech. But I think Sternberg, he didn't test very well, but to me, watching him, he just like looks like a dude who's ready to play tight end in the NFL. He looks like he can move well enough to do it. So I like Sternberger even as like a 3rd-round pick for an NFL team that's ready to use him as like the joker move tight end role. I think he's like a legit prospect.
I agree, and I'll go further. I have Sternberger as my 3rd tight end. I rank him number 42 overall. I really like Sternberger. He is so dangerous, and he's so polished too. You know, that's the thing with, like, you know, we were talking about tight ends where it's hard to project them because some of these skills are really hard for some of these kids to pick up. Sternberger's got all the ones as a receiver. You know, he's very polished, very good at the catch point. He's very good after the catch, and he has a very good understanding of, like, spacing. You know, he's one of those guys where you just expect him to get blasted right away. He makes a move, he breaks the tackle, and then, like, in the open field, he's got great vision. Athletically, he only tested 22nd percentile, but he's way more athletic on the field. And in terms of receiving, you know, in this class or whatever, just as a pure receiver right now, I think I might like him a little bit more than Fant at this second. Now, obviously, Fant's, you know, his upside and his ceiling is a lot higher, but Sternberger's got the polish that Fant needs to get, and Sternberger can also catch the ball, contested situations. He can also break tackles. So I like that one a lot, man.
Yeah.
Cahale Waring is the other guy I'm going to bring up, you know, as my sleeper. So I, in my first set of rankings, this was back in, I think early March, I had Waring number 3. I had Sternberger 4. I did eventually flip them, but they're both guys that I like a ton. And Waring, like, his deal, for people that don't know him, Waring didn't play football in high school. He just, you know, basically walked on at San Diego State. They took a flyer on him because he decided that he wanted to. He was a big kid who was a great athlete. He basically played every other sport outside of football in high school, like polo and like all these crazy sports or whatever. So he goes to San Diego State. San Diego State, for people that don't watch a ton of college football, it's basically like Wisconsin or the West Coast, but in the group of five. You know, it's just like run the ball, physical. And so with their tight ends, they never throw to their tight ends at San Diego State. And you would have seen Waring for the first time if you were watching like Rashad Penny tape last year. You know, he's a kid that, you know, he wipes some kids out as a blocker too. He's definitely not on Hawkins' level, but he's a very good blocker. And the other thing is, like, you know, then when you're thinking about his projection, you're thinking about how is he going to play as a receiver in the NFL with that physical package. You know, that's the harder thing to say. He did have a high drop rate in college, but we also saw him make some really slick plays. And, you know, Davis was alluding to this before. Tight end is one of the slowest developing positions and hardest to project, you know, when we're talking about the NFL and the NFL draft. And so with some of these kids, you do want to bet on the traits more than some of these other things. And Waring's traits are so much better, for instance, than Irv Smith's, which is part of the reason why I rank him higher.
Yeah, I'm out on Irv Smith. I get that he was like a good player at Alabama and had like some good production, but he's like H-back sized, and I just don't really see it with Irv Smith.
Yeah, Irv Smith's absolute, you know, if it's just a bonanza and everything goes right, he'll be a better blocking Trey Burton. But that, man, you can't go into the draft thinking with every single one of these guys, if they hit their absolute ceiling or whatever. I think that there's a better chance that Irv Smith is a tweener, you know, that he's a guy who's caught between multiple things. He's a 6'2", 242, and he tested in the 21st percentile. So you're talking a kid who's not big enough to play in line. He basically has to be an H-back, but he's not athletic, right? And so you start to wonder, like, what could Irv actually do? I sort of struggle with that. And even as a receiver, like, he had good stats last year at Alabama, but he's not a very polished receiver. You know, in terms of, like, Sternberger is – worlds above him as a receiver right now. Irv was the kind of guy where, you know, Tua would go back, you know, Alabama, they got their three wide receivers on the field. They got you spread out. Jacobs in the backfield there with Tua. And then, you know, you got Irv, maybe you got him in line, maybe you motion him back, you know, you do the H back, then you got him in the backfield, and then he sort of leaks out. And the deal every time was the three outside receivers, they were all burners, you know, Waddle and Judy and, you know, all those different guys, Smith and all those guys, they would go downfield, and Tua's looking for those guys when they're all covered. Then he wants to see what's Jacobs up to. Okay. Now Jacobs cover, you know, Jacobs stay back to block, whatever. Now we're going to Irv. You know, Irv a lot of times would just sort of be in the middle of the field, sort of camped out. And sometimes the defense would forget about him. And he was a guy that, you know, Tua could shuttle the ball off to him. And then, you know, typically Irv was on the opposing team's, shall we say, least gifted coverage guy. And so Irv, you know, he catch the ball. He's not a hands catcher either. You know, he's not like a natural sort of plucker of the ball. And, you know, if he made one guy miss, what Irv can do, you know, is get north south pretty good. So, you know, if he could break one tackle, then he could be headed upfield. And so you saw some of those longer touchdowns. But just in terms of his counting stats, you know, I feel like if a lot of these guys, like, I mean, man, you think about if Foster Moreau had been at Alabama instead of Irv, would Foster Moreau have put up big numbers? Alize Mack, if he'd been there, would he have put up, you know, huge numbers and stuff like that? I drop Irv to five. And this was, you know, this was back in like March. This was when, you know, there were some people that had Irv as at tight end one, which is just absolutely Looney Tunes. You know, it's like, guys, watch the games. You got to watch the games. You can't just go by, you know, it's Irv Smith Jr. His dad played in the NFL, stuff like that. But even like, you know, even if he wasn't, you know, tight end one, it was two or three. And yeah, I'm just sort of out on him. Maybe I just don't have the courage to rate him lower, but the guys that I have lower than him on the board, I would almost prefer them. Yeah, well, I definitely would prefer them at the price tag they're going to go for. You know, guys like Dawson Knox or Foster Moreau, Drew Sample's another kid I kind of like. Alize Mack is a kid who I've expected to break out for years at Notre Dame. He had crappy quarterback play, but, you know, he's sort of that prototypical move tight end kind of guy, another natural receiver who's a solid athlete. So, yeah, if it was my team, we would absolutely not be coming out of the draft with Irv Smith.
There we go. That wraps up our offensive discussion. So if that's all you wanted to hear, we won't be mad at you if you don't listen as close to the next. Thor will be mad. But we're going to talk about some of the defensive prospects now. First, of course, we have to talk about edge rushers. You know, people know the names, Josh Allen, Brian Burns, Cleland Farrell. But I'm wondering if you have some sleepers for us at the edge position, guys that you should want your team to take outside of the first two rounds.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So you want to go day three?
Yeah, let's do day three. Day three, Edge.
Okay, so I don't know if he's going to get down there, but the tenure and the mood has been so low on this kid that I think there is a possibility he gets to the top of round four. So I'll toss him out first. That's my boy Sack Daddy, Jalen Ferguson out of Louisiana Tech. He broke the FBS sack record, and he's a kid who he gets nitpicked because his three cone was pretty bad, and his, you know, his sort of lack of agility and twitch, you would say, or whatever, that's apparent on tape. But he is a guy who he wins speed to power. You know, he's one of those guys in the Marcus Davenport vein, you know, from last year, whatever. And it's crazy to me because, you know, last year I was lower on Marcus Davenport than everybody. And this year I'm going to end up being higher on Ferguson than everybody. But the funny thing is I rate them pretty close to the same. I think that they're pretty similar players. And in fact, Jim Nagy, the Senior Bowl director, former NFL scout, he scouted both of them. You know, he's seen them both up close. He actually likes Ferguson a little bit more than Davenport. So I have Ferguson as my edge seven, right behind Rashawn Gary and right ahead of Chase Winovich. So he's one guy to toss out. And then some other guys on day three to keep an eye on. Max Crosby out of Eastern Michigan is a kid I like a lot. He's 6'5", 255, testing the 88th percentile. He's very long. He's creative. He's a very hard worker, and he's always going on the field. You know, he's one of those motor guys that you can't shut off. He needs to get bigger. You know, he right now, you know, in terms of play strength, in terms of bulk, like we could stand to get him a little bit bigger, and he's got the frame to do it. So, you know, he's a kid that I'm pretty high on. I'd take a shot on him. I'd rather have Max Crosby, for instance, than, you know, Ben Benagu is one guy that, you know, people go nuts for, but I didn't really love the work that Benagu did at TCU. O'Shane Zaminas from Old Dominion. Like, I would rather have Crosby than both of those guys. So he's one. And then, like, if you want to go like really, really deep, Raheem Bingham of Arkansas State, he's a guy to keep an eye on. And he might go undrafted. You know, he's probably going to be a seventh rounder or an undrafted guy because he's only 6'2", he's only 242, and he's stuck on the edge. But a very gifted pass rusher. He was number three in pass rush productivity last year by Pro Football Focus. He's a kid that's going to have to, you know, try his best he can to add a little bit of bulk and get stronger. But I know that he can rush the passer. So, you know, if I'm going to take a flyer, man, especially if it doesn't cost me anything on a UDFA contract, that's a kid that I'd want to bring in on the cheap.
So the guys that I am with you on are Max Crosby, and then the guy I would disagree with you with is Ben Benagu, simply because I think if someone that athletic goes to an NFL team that can coach him up, it just seems like that's the profile of a guy who maybe kind of struggles in college but gets to an NFL team and figures out how to use his physical gifts.
Yeah, and it could. You know, it definitely could. You know, the thing that I'll say about Benagu, he was done no favors by his situation. Like, he's a kid from Texas, and he probably should have gotten a P5 offer coming out, and he didn't. He, you know, he had to go to UL Monroe, and he dominated at UL Monroe. And then the Power 5 teams were like, oops, sorry, like, can we make it up to you by giving you a scholarship now? And so, you know, Benagu wanted to play in Texas. So he goes back to TCU, and I had really high hopes for Benagu. I mean, you know, this kid has always been a really long, really sick athlete. It just did not come together for me at TCU. But I, you know, I will say, you know, in terms of the frame, in terms of the testing, you know, the athletic profile, and the other thing, the motor, you know, the kid does play really hard, but man, is he raw. I mean, he's a long way away. And what concerns me is that he played for Gary Patterson. You know, I mean, he wasn't playing for one of these, like, you know, Big 12 schools that doesn't have a defensive staff. Basically, like, Gary Patterson is one of the better defensive coaches in college football. He put Benagu in a position to succeed, and he most certainly tried to polish him off. They didn't quite get there. You know, Benagu has issues like with, you know, just like with like, you know, nuts and bolts, meat and potato type things, like tackling. You know, like he has a really hard issue, like, you know, getting people down and stuff like that. And then his athleticism did not show to this degree, did not show on tape. When he was at TCU or whatever. So he does retain some of those things. I understand why he'd be worth, a flyer. I just think he's going to go higher than I think he ought to. You know, for instance, like LJ Collier, the other edge rusher at TCU, he's a guy who does not have the dimensions, and he most certainly does not have the testing, but I think he's a better player.
Yeah, I can see that. And, you know, I'm never going to come on a podcast and claim to know, you know, a ton about evaluating defensive prospects, but I do just always tend to value that athleticism.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So interior defensive lineman, everyone knows the name Quinnen Williams and Ed Oliver and probably even Christian Wilkins by now. Those are like the three big interior defensive lineman prospects. And you and I are both big Ed Oliver guys, I think. But outside of those, you know, blue chip prospects, who are some guys that, you know, that we should be paying attention to at the interior defensive line?
Yeah, I'll toss some at you. One is a kid that I'm very intrigued by is Tristan Hill, a kid out of UCF. He's a kid, you know, we talk about interior penetration. You know, it's king, you know, in the NFL. And if you can get a three technique that can consistently penetrate, especially on the cheap, you know, it's a guy that you have to, you know, be intrigued by or whatever. That's what he is. You know, pure and simple, he's an interior penetrator. And he tested in the 82nd percentile. His issue, number one, is he doesn't really do a whole lot of other things on the football field. And then number two, he's a pain in the butt to his coaches. Scott Frost seemed to get along better with Hill, you know, when he brought him in, you know, played him, seemed to trust him, stuff like that. When Josh Heupel came down from Missouri, not so much this past year, they really clashed heads. To the point where Tristan Hill could have skipped their bowl game, you know, this season against LSU. He decides to play in it, and Heupel benched him again. You know, I mean, Hill only ended up starting like three or four games this year, which is crazy. I mean, he was, you know, he's one of the 10 most talented interior defensive linemen in college football. He was last year. And on a G5 team, you know, they're sticking him on the bench, but he does play extremely hard. It's just sort of a maturity thing, but the measurables are there. And on tape, you could see the interior penetration. I mean, ridiculous. The other guys I'd point out, a guy who's sort of opposite is Greg Gaines of Washington. He's a guy who played, you know, at an extremely high level in the Pac-12 for multiple years. And he's been doing this for a really long time, but he does not have the measurables. You know, he's 6'1", 312, tested in the 40th percentile, which is actually a bit better than I thought he was going to, which is why I bumped him up just a little bit. But, you know, he's also a short arms kind of a guy, and he doesn't have a ton of nuance, but he's extremely aggressive and he's very difficult to deal with. You know, he's a guy who you have to have multiple blockers to try to move him in there. And so he's a guy that I like because I know that he's going to contribute. Absolutely. You know, even if the ceiling's not as high as some of these other guys, the floor is very, very, very high in Greg Gaines. And he's going to be available probably well into day three, you know, as some of these other guys with better measurables go. So he's another one. Armon Watts, you know, a lot from Arkansas. A lot of people talk about Rennell Wren as sort of like, you know, the rangy interior lineman that they like. I like Watts more than I like Wren. You know, I gave him a comp to Shamar Stephen. He's a guy who's very smart. He has a lot of moves inside, and he was playing on like this sinking ship of an Arkansas team this past season and really took a big step forward. So I like him a lot. One other name I'll toss at you because I gotta do a shout out for my Kansas boy, Daniel Wise, 6'3", 281. I gave him a comp to Tom Johnson. You know, in terms of, you know, his size and his athleticism, it's not a great combination. You know, I mentioned only 281, only 22nd percentile, but he's another guy who gets after the quarterback from inside and is very difficult to deal with, you know, penetrates from the inside. He has NFL bloodlines. His brother's playing in the NFL right now. His dad played in the NFL before. I think Daniel Wise is absolutely going to contribute, and I think he's a guy who could surprise.
Anytime that we can get into a KU defensive player, we know that we are getting into the weeds. I love it. This is why I brought you on the show, man.
Absolutely. Well, and we go to linebacker. We talk about an undrafted guy, Joe Denis, and he tackled everything. Their middle linebacker behind Daniel Wise, because Daniel Wise is difficult to deal with. You got to give him multiple blockers, open up Denis. And so, yeah, absolutely, man.
All right, so now I want to talk about cornerbacks because this is one I actually have some input on. Nick Needham is my dude from UTEP, long, athletic. My friends from Sports Info Solutions have him as one of the best projected values in terms of where he's expected to be drafted and his NFL path. So Nick Needham is definitely a guy. Like I want the Chiefs to maybe look at him, maybe even with what is now their third round pick after the trade that just went down. Who are some of the cornerbacks that you are into from this class?
Yeah, I would say the guys. Okay, so one, you know, a little bit higher. I don't know where this guy's going to go, but he's been to me just stunningly overlooked, and that's David Long from Michigan. He's a guy who absolutely shut people down in the Big 12, or sorry, in the Big 10 from the jump. You know, they were always putting him on the number one receiver, and he shut them all down. And you know, during, you know, the last couple of years where like during the fall, you look at like the draft rankings up, he was always down. And when anyone would talk about him, they just nitpick the heck out of his game. Like he's, you know, he's too small. He's not, you know, he's too small. He's not athletic enough for, you know, for the outside, and his game won't translate inside because, you know, he's more physical and he, you know, he's not as good with the shifty guys or whatever. You know, you'd hear stuff like that, you'd be like, really? Like I seen this guy shut everyone down. And then he goes to Indianapolis and he tests in the 91st percentile in Spark, and I mean just crazy testing. I mean, you know, like his 40 was great, his three cone was great, his shuttle was great, everything was great. And even despite the fact that he's been one of the nation's best cornerbacks now, you know, 2-3 years running, you know, on the big stage, you know, this isn't like Rocky Assin playing well for Temple for one season, or, you know, Sean Bunting playing okay in the MAC. Like, this is a guy shutting down the best of the best in the Big Ten. And so, you know, with all those different, and by the way, he's 5'11", 196. I mean, he's the same size as Julian Love. He's the same height, and he's seven pounds heavier than Byron Murphy, and way more athletic by the testing. So he's a kid who's been overlooked. I'll allow you to jump in because I got to cough real quick. Then I'll get back into the deeper guys.
So David Long actually is the exact type of prospect that I'm pretty likely to be into, which is where people sort of overrate what they see a player doing in a Power 5 conference defense, basically. And the same thing is true of my absolute favorite NFL corner, which is Byron Jones, who plays for the Dallas Cowboys. Byron Jones was maybe my favorite cornerback prospect of all time, and then he went to the combine and he just turned up, and he was like the Spark King, to the point that I was like pretty sure the Seahawks were going to try and trade up to get him, and he went to the Cowboys. And it, you know, anytime a cornerback is that good in terms of the combine performance, and I guess in terms of cornerback evaluation, I would say this: if all the scouts agree he's draftable in the first couple rounds, the odds are probably that he is good enough to cover NFL wide receivers. And so I think the athleticism for corners should really matter. So I'm pretty with you on the Long evaluation.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and you know, my analytics guys out there, you know, they run all these regressions and, you know, all these different things and whatnot. And the numbers are emphatic about this. You know, cornerback in terms of athletic testing, the profile they turn in, it's more important than just about any position, you know. And when you see like the day three guys that pan out, they're typically guys that tested really well, that during their pre-draft process, for whatever reason, they were getting nitpicked a little bit. So, you know, when I'm looking at drafting a day three cornerback in particular, I want a guy who tested really well, you know. And so some guys, you know, that fit that. Here's a crazy deep sleeper would be Steven Denmark out of Valdosta State. 6'4", 220, tested in the 98th percentile, you know, and that's a guy who's going to be available on day three. I mean, obviously there's going to be kinks to work out there, but man, you talk about a fabulous package. Another guy, Ken Webster out of Mississippi, guy who's been around a long time, sort of up and down during his career, but 5'11", 203, he tested in the 91st percentile. Tim Harris of Virginia, another kid that tested really well. These guys are going to be available late. You know, another guy, Baylor, you know, Jalen Hurts' teammate last year, Derek Thomas, 6'3", 189. He tests in the 83rd percentile. You know, a lot of these guys have issues where they're raw, you know, different parts of their game like that. If you can fix some of those things, they have NFL tools. They have the tools to be NFL stars. So Corey Ballantyne's another guy you hear tossed out a lot. He tests in the 95th percentile. He's out of Washburn. He's a little bit shorter, you know, which sometimes concerns me if you get beneath 5'11", with some of these kids, especially if they're coming from a smaller school. If you haven't seen the proof of concept, like, you know, like for instance, like a DeAndre Baker, kind of a guy, he's only 5'11". He didn't test very well, but I saw him shut down SEC, you know, receivers like throughout his career. So yeah, I'm with you on those guys, man, for sure. Jamel Dean is another guy that I'll toss out of Auburn. He had knee issues. You know, he signed with Ohio State coming out of high school, was a very good recruit, and Ohio State medically disqualified him, which you will almost never see, especially with an elite recruit like that. He ended up at Auburn, had a very good career, and he 6'1", 206, tested in the 97th percentile. Another kid to keep an eye on.
So one of the safeties that I'm really into is Juan Thornhill, and he might actually end up going sort of high. I actually think now that Seattle has an extra first round pick, there's like a pretty decent chance he goes in the first round, because Juan Thornhill is the most Seattle Seahawks defensive back that has ever existed. You know, he's a big physical safety who's almost a three sigma athlete in terms of what he did at Spark Score at the combine. Where are you at on safety? Do you like Nasir Adderley, the FCS guy?
I really do. Yeah. Adderley is my first safety. I think I rated him 32 overall. So I have him at the very bottom of that sort of first round cutoff. I like Thornhill a lot. I have him 4. And like you mentioned, I mean, he tested in the 99th percent. I think, you know, my number here is 99.5. So he tested as one of the most athletic safeties in combine history. So that's pretty good. The two guys I have above him are other extremely athletic guys who now, you know, as we get closer and closer to the draft, their profile is going up a bit. Number two, I have Amani Hooker out of Iowa. Just again, it was just great last year. It just does so many different things. He tested in the 84th percentile. And then Darnell Savage out of Maryland tested in the 86th percentile. Extremely fast and extremely aggressive. He's a bit undersized. But, you know, that most of the guys in this class are, you know, in this safety class, you know, that's what the NFL is going towards now. You know, the smaller, the faster, the more athletic kind of guys. So, yeah, so I have Adderley 1. I have Hooker 2, Savage 3, Thornhill 4, Rapp 5. Rapp is very, very difficult because Rapp, just as a player, you know, is an absolute stud. He's so good. But the issue is he's just not athletic. You know, he tested in the 31st percentile. In terms of toughness, in terms of smarts, in terms of being a Swiss Army knife that can do, like, all these different things, I love him. I love him. I love him. But I had to drop him to 5 just because of that lack of athleticism, you know, and the lack of foot speed. I mean, he had a really, really bad 40. So I had to drop him just a bit. You know, you just wonder about that kind of stuff. But, I still like his game. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson's a guy that I'm a little bit lower on than some other folks. I had him 6. And what was funny is I actually had Chauncey Gardner-Johnson higher than everyone in my too early, 2019 defensive rankings or whatever from last May. I think I had him as safety 1, and I got a bunch of crap from Florida fans that are like, you know, he's not that good. Like, you know, you're being unrealistic, all this different kind of stuff. And then Gardner Johnson came out and did what I thought he was going to do, or what I wanted him to do, which is he put everything together. You know, in 2017, he wasn't that good of a player. He's just, they were using him all over the place. He could do a lot of different things. You know, he's a guy that can play in the slot. He can play free safety. You know, you can move him around, stuff like that. The things finally started to come together in 2018, but I still have some questions about him, where it's like, he can do all these different things. Like, you can bring him up. He's willing against the run. You can put him in the slot. He was great in the slot last year at Florida. And you can also play him at free safety. But is he good enough at any of those one different thing, you know, where you could, like, play him at, you know, at one spot and he would be, like, a good player there? Or is he just sort of, like, solid at everything, but he's not, you know, good enough at one thing that you can just be like, okay, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson is our, you know, free safety forever or whatever. So I have some questions about him. I rank him 6. And then the two guys I have beneath him, because this safety class goes 8 deep, where, you know, there's 8 guys that you could basically make an argument for safety 1. I got Deontay Thompson, 7, the Alabama kid. He's a kid that came into the season with a lot of hype, struggled early on, and then he sort of came on late. He's a center fielder type. He's a good player. I just think the guys above him are better. And then number 8, the hitman, Jonathan Abram of Mississippi State. Kid I love to watch, and I love his attitude. The kid's so physical that one time you read the scouting reports and people say – They use the anecdote of Jonathan Abram got kicked out of his spring game, you know, once because of a hit. That's not technically true. Jonathan Abram had such a nasty and frankly, honestly, a dirty hit in the spring game. They canceled it. That was the last play of the spring game. Like, the coaches were, you know, they had to go out and tend to this kid that he'd knocked out, and they were just like, all right, we're calling the thing off. Jonathan Abram is so ridiculous and so physical, he got a spring game truncated. You know, like, so I like him a lot, but you do want, you know, Keanu Neal was another safety, you know, that sort of had a similar type profile that, like, rose, you know, in his pre-draft process or whatever. I didn't think he had any chance of going in the first round or whatever. And to this point, you know, maybe he's underwhelmed a bit, right? And so, you know, Abram's, you know, a similar kind of a guy where with his athletic profile, You just wonder, like, is he athletic enough, you know, that you can get that enforcer sort of attitude out there without sort of compromising yourself somewhere else? Abram did play in the slot a lot last year at Mississippi State. He had a lot of snaps there, but he did not acquit himself particularly well. I think it would be a mistake to play him in the slot in the NFL. I just sort of wonder, is he athletic enough, you know, to be a Pro Bowl type player? But man, would you, like that attitude on your defense? I sort of liken it to a, like in hockey, you know, I'm from Minnesota, big hockey guy. Like, you have your enforcer, you know, like if you have Sidney Crosby on your team, you want to have a guy who's not very talented, but it will just get in a fist fight if anyone tries to rough up Sid. That's sort of what Abram is in terms of disincentivizing the opposing team's quarterback from leaving the pocket. You know, like if Abram was on, like, let's say he was on like Pittsburgh, you know, and they're playing the Ravens, and now Lamar Jackson wants to leave the pocket and he looks up at Abram's out there just frothing at the mouth, trying to knock him out. You know, it is going to disincentivize some of that stuff. But yeah, he's an interesting eval, but I bumped him to 8 for some of those reasons.
All right. So last position, off the ball linebacker. Give me the takes. Who are the middle linebackers and the off the line of scrimmage linebackers who are going to make a difference the next couple of years?
Sure. So one guy that I love is Sutton Smith, a guy that I think has been very overrated during this process because you don't really know where to put him, right? He was a kid who absolutely destroyed worlds at Northern Illinois as an edge rusher. You know, he came into college actually as a running back. And Alabama briefly looked at him. They brought him to camp. They were thinking about offering Sutton Smith a scholarship to play running back for the Crimson Tide, and Sutton didn't quite get there, but Saban did like him. And so Sutton ends up falling down to the G5. You know, Northern Illinois gets him. They eventually decide to play him on the edge, and he was just utterly unblockable. You can't touch him, you know, and he just created all this havoc. He's just a warrior. He's relentless. But then you go to the NFL, what is he going to do? He's 6 foot. He's 233, and his spark score was only in the 38th percentile. However, what I would tell people, you know, that's a size, weight, you know, adjusted thing, you know, for the position, stuff like that. He did have really good tests, specifically in the three cone. His three cone was on par with Von Miller's three cone, you know, and it was better than a lot of like elite, like it was better than, Khalil Mack and like, you know, some of those guys, a lot of those guys. So just an utterly elite three cone. Three cone, for most positions, is the most important test that you can do, because it's testing, you know, fluidity, you know, movement on, you know, cutting, stuff like that, like, you know, stop, start, you know, stuff like that. So he has that in absolute spades. I think he's going to be able to translate to a linebacker position. I think he's going to be really good. I rank him as the sixth linebacker in this class, sixth off-ball guy. Drew Tranquil is the guy that I rank just below him from Notre Dame. So I have Tranquil higher than a lot of people. Tranquil, he tests in the 88th percentile. Reminds me a lot of Fred Warner from the last class. Tranquil's a former safety and, you know, just so athletic, very good in coverage. The only question you have about Tranquil is he's got a couple knee surgeries in his past. So is his body going to hold up? It has so far, you know, the past couple years, but we'll see. Another guy that I love is Ben Burkervin from Washington. Another guy who's small. He's 6 foot 230, but just an absolute tackle machine. You know, he had 176 tackles last year. Awesome athleticism, 84%, awesome instincts. And he just goes for days. You know, he's one of those guys between the hashes. He's just, you know, he just does not turn off. Gives effort all the time. So I like him a lot. You know, I like those guys more than, for instance, a guy like Jermaine Pratt or, you know, Voshon Joseph, or, you know, some of these guys who have gotten, Tavon Coney is another guy. Some of these guys who have gotten more hype. I think some of these smaller guys that we know are really good and then came out and tested, you know, really well athletically, those are the guys that I would prefer to be taking flyers on, especially in this linebacker class where you have the two studs, you got the two Devons there at the top, and then you have a big sort of drop, and then you get into the second tier. Some people have it would be like the two Devons would be tier one, and then Mac Wilson would be tier two, and then you'd have tier three below that. I actually have Mac Wilson 4. I have Blake Cashman from Minnesota 3. So I guess I would have Cashman, Wilson, and maybe Tavai, you know, as sort of that next tier, and then like Sutton and Drew Tranquil and Sione Takitaki, a kid from BYU that I like. And then, you know, Ben Burkervin will probably be in that next one.
There we go. An informative NFL draft preview podcast. Thor, tell people where they can find you, my man.
You can find our stuff on RotoWorld and the NFL draft section. So today I will be posting my top 400, although it we'll see. It very well may get to a top 500 by the time I'm done slotting this thing. So that will be out there. All my position deep dives are out there. My final mock draft is either going to come tomorrow or Thursday. We'll see how that goes. We have videos, scouting reports, all that kind of stuff. And then check me out on Twitter at Thorku. It's Thorku, because I put all my links, to all my different stuff on there as well.
There we go. Thor, thanks so much for joining the show. Everyone make sure to read his top 500, perhaps, on rotoworld.com. Listen to the episode that Thor and I did with Pat Mayo on the Pat Mayo Hour, or actually the PME. I can't even remember what he calls his feed now. The Pat Mayo Experience. Yep. And just get hyped for the draft, you guys.